Hey everybody, this is the Drive On Podcast, where we talk about issues affecting veterans after they get out of the military. I'm your host, Scott DeLuzio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in to the Drive On Podcast. Today, my guest is Chip Rankin. Chip served 27 years in the U.S. Army and has worked as an educator for about 21 years. Over the course of his career, Chip has lost several students and also soldiers to suicide. He's found some commonalities with all of these individuals, and which I'm hoping to dig into a little bit with this episode. So, Chip, welcome to the show, and why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks for having me today, and a little bit about myself. Grew up in central Minnesota, got an undergrad at the University of Minnesota. I was a teacher for roughly 8 years. And I joined the Army National Guard when I was a college student to help pay a college debt, and deployed in 2005 to 2007 to Iraq. When I returned, I entered the education administration role as an assistant principal and then a principal later on. Subsequently, got deployed again from 2011 to 2012 to Afghanistan. And when I got home, I dabbled into becoming a superintendent. I'm entering my third year as a superintendent and approaching my 27th year in the Army. And we have a pending deployment coming up in the spring of 2020 to the Horn of Africa. So it's kind of me in a nutshell, married and four kids.
Oh, wow. Okay. Interesting. That's a long career in the both in the military and in education. So thank you for all of that public service, because that's all great stuff. And now, stepping into the superintendent role, I have to imagine that's probably a big change of pace for you as well.
Yeah, it's interesting.
So earlier, when we were kind of talking offline, going back and forth with some emails, you had mentioned to me that you seem to have found a common issue amongst the soldiers and the students that you've lost to suicide. And that issue you mentioned was resiliency. Would you mind kind of going into that topic a little bit more?
Well, one of the things the military has done since I've come home from Iraq and Afghanistan, especially in the last 5 to 7 years, losing 22 service members a day to suicide, is they've really stressed, resiliency training. I have resiliency trainers in my organization. Currently, I serve as a commander for 2nd Battalion, 135th Infantry out of Mankato, Minnesota. We have just shy of about 1,000 soldiers. There's requirements annually to complete a certain number of hours in resiliency training. And, rightfully so, the military is deeply concerned about the number of suicides in our organization. And, in parallel life, being a principal, we always talk about what are the barriers to student achievement and student success, and why doesn't 100% of kids graduate high school, and why do we see issues of suicide, depression, chemical use? And it's interesting is you watch a few TED Talks and a common denominator is, a level of grit, a level of resiliency. And it's very interesting that in two different worlds, two different settings, you find a common denominator.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you talked a little bit about this resiliency training in the military. What does some of that training look like? What are some of the things that you do in that type of training?
A lot of it is, developed by, an organization that put together a different number of videos. They call a lot of vignettes, so settings, hunting the good. A lot of it is how you approach things versus how things approach you. A lot of it is being, just self-awareness in how you approach, problem solving and how you approach each day. And so what the training looks like is, just say we took a 4-hour block of instruction. It would be a combination of PowerPoints, videos. The instructors have to get certified. They serve at the unit level down to the smallest unit, which might be a squad. which might be about 12 soldiers, but as high as a company, which might be 135. And they'll pick key topics, and it's not just just around resiliency, but what they do is they work through skills of, you know, coping through difficult situations that might paralyze an individual. For example, let's just talk about finances. There are some people that, their finances can cause depression, divorce. They just talk to you through skills and how to get through that so you don't have to go through those experiences.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense that the military would do something like this to kind of help the soldiers get through some of this stuff and build that resiliency, because a lot of what you do in the military, especially, being infantry, I was also infantry. So, a lot of the stuff that you do requires some degree of resiliency. So I gave a presentation at a conference about a year and a half ago or so, talking to other entrepreneurs about the lessons that I learned in the military that I've been able to apply to my own business. Hopefully with the idea of helping those other entrepreneurs to be able to apply some of that stuff to their own business. And one of the topics that I discussed was the kind of concept of embrace the suck, which is if anyone is not familiar who might be listening with that phrase, it's kind of a common phrase in the military, and it's sort of tongue in cheek a little bit. But we use that to kind of either accept or like appreciate something that's either difficult or unpleasant, something that you might have to do, whether it's a long ruck march or, whatever it happens to be. It's just, that concept of embracing the suck, to get through that difficult thing, because whatever that thing is that you're doing is ultimately unavoidable. Like, you still have to do it. Just because it sucks doesn't mean that you can't, you can just stop doing it or whatever. So it's unavoidable for whatever that forward progress or momentum to kind of take place. So anyways, I gave an example of a farmer who might be growing a bamboo tree, for example. And I picked a bamboo tree for kind of a specific reason. I know it sounds like it's a sort of off the wall kind of thing, but if you kind of know anything about bamboo trees, when the seed that's first planted for the bamboo tree, it needs to be watered almost daily before that seed breaks ground, that little sapling or whatever you want to call it breaks ground almost 5 years later from the time that it was first planted. And so now that has to be some sort of dedication and even a little bit of faith to be able to tend to a plant for 5 years and that you don't even know really if it took root or not at that point. But once when the tree does break through the ground, it can grow about 80 to 90 feet in just a little over a month, up out of the ground. So at that point, the growth seems almost effortless, but in reality, it required years of weeding and watering and everything else that goes into it in order for that tree to even get to the point where it broke ground. And that's the suck that we kind of talked about there. But, it makes it so that some people might view other people and see, like, oh, it looks like they're an overnight success, or they're doing this thing effortlessly, whether it's a physical exercise or, in schools, someone just gets this math, problem really easily. And I must be dumb because I don't get it or something like that, which is totally probably not the case in many, many cases. It's just a matter of that other person put in the work, to get to that point where they understand it better at a better level. And so I can imagine that in some cases, especially with the students that you are dealing with on a day-to-day basis, that they may have some level of self-doubt or things like that, where they're seeing other people who are acing tests and things like that, and they may just feel kind of down on themselves because it seems like no matter what they do, they're not able to achieve that same level of success. But what you were saying is that resiliency is something that sort of seems like it might help them get to that point.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, part of the resiliency training is avoid thinking traps. Well, all that really means, and if you boil it all down, is that you can't think, well, oh, I got to go to work today. It's going to be so miserable. It's going to be so horrible. And I got to deal with this. And I deal with this. Well, if you start thinking about what's going to happen to you about versus the possibilities of what you could make happen today, I mean, you get thinking traps, and it'd be no different than a student coming to work and like, oh my gosh, I got to go to biology today. Well, that thinking trap, because of maybe one negative experience, you think that every experience is going to be negative. And if you already approach it that way, then it's probably going to happen. That's going to be negative. And it's just getting out of that mindset. And I think that there comes a point that maybe it's your point of view. Is it really that sucky? I mean, I think for me as a kid, I grew up on a dairy farm, you know, cleaning barns with a pitchfork. There were no bobcats. And, you know, or baling hay, and you were so giddy because you got a penny a bale. And now that you're an adult, you're like, boy, they really kind of took advantage of me there. But at the time, a penny seemed like a big deal. Now, as a kid, I was excited. But if I was an adult, I'm probably not doing it for a penny a bale. Now, that's 25 years ago. But you get my point. It's all about your perspective.
Yeah, it is. And actually, that kind of brings up another point that, you know, regarding the resiliency and the that kind of effort that it might take somebody to kind of just push through. There's something that I read about a while ago. I think it was actually kind of this idea. It was kind of created by a Navy SEAL, but it's a rule that he came up with called the 40% rule. And now that the 40% number isn't like a scientifically calculated or proven number or anything like that, it's just kind of like a ballpark estimate, but for what we're talking about, it's actually a good kind of estimate. And what the 40% rule says is that when you're doing something that's difficult, there will come a time when your mind says you're done, whether it's a physical activity, you know, lifting weights or, you know, running a long distance or even a mental activity where you're studying or you're taking a test or something like that. There's going to come a time when your mind is just like, I quit, I'm done. And so no matter what the task is, you will eventually come to a point where you just kind of want to quit. And it's that point where most of us will just quit on whatever that thing is. And at that point, we've only really done about 40% of what we're capable of doing. And now imagine if that bamboo farmer that I was talking about earlier quit after the second year, the tree that he was planting wouldn't stand a chance. But that's the mindset that like elite soldiers like Navy SEALs and Rangers and things like that have, and why they're capable of doing things that are seemingly like superhuman, you know, where they're able to hold their breath for a super long time and, you know, run for a long period of time and do all these kind of crazy tasks. And I think in knowing that it can sort of help us push through difficult situations to give it a bit more effort. Now this whole 40% rule isn't so much about the individual goals or tasks of a, you know, maybe a test or, you know, going into work or, you know, whatever, but it's the mindset that's required to kind of push past that 40% and have the perseverance that it takes to keep on going, which is, in my opinion, it's more important than whatever that individual task that they're doing is. It sort of builds a character and makes you into the type of person that will ultimately be successful. You know, so it's kind of a interesting thing that you're talking about there in terms of you know, how all that works. You know, in the classroom and stuff too.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I think I look like this. I'm pretty much a homegrown Minnesota guy most of my life, and getting deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan, you know, a lot of people think like how horrible that could be. I personally think it was a life-changing event. Yes, not just the fact that you're deployed in a combat theater, but getting a chance to see how another population lives and the daily grind of their life. And, you know, we get upset if our favorite cup of type of coffee is not available at our favorite convenience store, and there's not even convenience stores located. I mean, we get upset last week. The power went out at our school for about an hour and a half. But if you went back in the last 5 years of our school, say the power went out, even if it went out 20 times in 5 years, it was probably on off for less than 2 hours. And when you get deployed, you realize like these people in an entire country might only get 2 hours of power the entire week. And you may not have it for a month, but they just, their lives continue on. And so if you sat there and dwelled on it, now people are like, well, that's pretty foolish because you live in an industrialized country and it's expectation. But, you know, I guess it kind of comes from the next thing I would kind of talk about is, to me, it's all about perspective management. You know, if your perspective is that it needs to be X, Y, and Z, then it can really be crushed when it's not X, Y, and Z, and it's A, B, C. And but I guess it's all based on experience. And, you know, again, I'll go back to what you said, embrace the suck. I mean, so the power's out for 2 hours. It's fall. It's Minnesota. It's beautiful. Go outside. You'll be just fine. Do you know what I mean? The world's not coming to an end.
Yeah, and that's a really good point, is that the perspective, I think, is something that people need to really maybe focus on their perspective a little bit, in terms of not focusing on the negatives so much, and realize that there are there is a way through it. I suppose, you know whatever their situation might be, you know, especially like you're talking about, like your favorite type of coffee is not available or something. It's like, that's totally not the end of the world at this point. You can definitely carry on with your day, get a different flavor or different brand or whatever it is, like just move on, you know, through that. So have you seen, like what have kind of strategies have you seen, you know, throughout your career with, the different, coping mechanisms to change people's perspectives on certain things?
You know, I always tell people when they come to school, like, hey, so school or the army, how are we going to hunt the good stuff today? I tell people that all the time, like, hunt the good, because, you know, the bad's always hunting you. So, you know, to me, when you get up in the morning and, you know, maybe you're having a tough day, well, and turn it around immediately. What good can happen, and what are you going to search out, and how are you going to make that actually happen? And, you know, I think about it in the same way from a student, like, okay, so it didn't go so well. To me, there comes that point where, okay, your self-regulation, it doesn't mean you allow yourself to get so low. And I talk about it all the time, you know, teenagers with hormones, emotions going really high, and they can really low. And, you know, we get really excited when our favorite football player scores that massive touchdown. But the celebration, it almost seems to be so high that I feel like sometimes if you get too high, then you can also feel too low. So then you don't score for like four games, then you're in an all-time low. So it's like that self-regulation, and then hunting the good stuff. I mean, what could happen today? What good things mean to you? One of the things I ask for students to do is I'll even ask them to, you know, journal three things that happened good today. And they're like, well, nothing good happened today. Oh, nothing. I mean, nothing good at all. And it just trying to challenge them. And then it's defining what could be good. I mean, somebody paid you a compliment. Well, that's something good. Well, and then they start to get in these mind traps. Well, they didn't probably mean it. Well, stop reading into it. If they said you look nice, then you look nice. They didn't say you look nice, but what I'm really mean is you look horrible, but I'm going to say you look nice. I mean, like, those are mind traps that you just need to get yourself out of. Accept it for what it is. Don't read into it and move on. And I think too that, okay, go ahead. I think the most critical thing that I learned too is, I had two soldiers, die, on December 2nd, 2006. And, you know, up to that point, we'd had a lot of close calls, 40, 50 IEDs a week. We'd taken some small arms fire. And, you know, guys had, you know, they talk and they joke about it, but then ultimately, you know, on December, something that actually happened. And, you know, in the military, we have a tradition that when you have a fallen soldier, you will have a memorization ceremony. And so here I'm in Fallujah, Iraq. And, you know, the whole company that could be available attended, and you get all these senior officers. And, you know, at the time, it's pretty paralyzing. He was a commander. I was a captain at the time. And I had about 150 soldiers, 50 Marines and sailors in my unit. But I knew all of them. I mean, maybe not like they weren't my friends, unfortunately. I was their commander, but I got to know a lot of them. And what I got to observe is, just the array of emotions that happen, from guys that were paralyzed, that just couldn't go back out again, to people that are going to go up in the next 5 minutes and they're going to get revenge. And then the vast majority is somewhere in the middle. And I think it's eye-opening just to watch in the most dire times how it almost like scatters everybody to, you know, four different directions. And it was interesting watching probably about eight of them out of that nearly 200 soldiers that, I mean, it seriously took them nearly 2 weeks where they had been there. We had been deployed by that time. We'd already been in theater in Iraq for about 9 months. It wasn't something new to them, but it was the first time they had to deal with actually one of their fellow soldiers. And some of them, they weren't even they were a soldier in another organization, a different platoon. So they knew each other, but maybe they didn't know each other intimately, but it affected them so deeply that it was tough for them. And I guess what I found the most interesting is, working through that to get them back out. But a lot of that resiliency training came into play. And, you know, one of the things I find most interesting is, you know, at the time, it sounded pretty corny, but, you know, our chaplain just said, this will pass too. And he is an older dude. You know, I'm thinking I'm 32, but he's probably in his early 50s. And, he probably witnessed this a few times, and he also kept it in perspective, right? These were not his friends. These were not one of his soldiers, but he was a reservist himself. He was a Marine Corps, actually a Navy reservist chaplain, a priest. And he'd probably have been to 50 to 100 funerals, maybe to 500 funerals, I don't know, overseeing them. And, you know, now I look back at it, and today it's 2019, and I think, well, yeah, it did pass. And all those soldiers that did actually have to deal with that, I mean, almost all of them came through it. And at the time, you would think that they didn't even know if they could get out of bed the next day. But because we had a mission and they didn't want to let their friends down, especially their friends and their colleagues and their buddies, they got back up and they did it. And I think sometimes the power of that resiliency is making a phone call, you know? And to me, it's like kind of being a jerk. And like in the Army, you know that you don't get to just lay in your bed. Somebody's going to come in the next morning. If you're 3 minutes late, they're going to change your world immediately and not allow you to sink lower. And I think the biggest thing I see in this resiliency is, to me, is those mental games and putting things into perspective. But I also think it's, to me, just keep going after your battle buddies and don't let them sink. Find those icebergs that others find and get them through it, because this too shall pass. And you just can't let them stay static. You got to keep moving forward. And to me, that's no different from the student, right? There's not a problem that we can't solve together. But if you're not aware of a problem, you'll never actually start tackling it. And, you know, to my experience with this is, it's the isolation that will allow individuals, one phone call, one email. I don't know about Snapchat, but my kids sure love it. but, you know, one picture might brighten someone's day. And it might make him go another day. And then the next one might be another day. And as long as we keep moving forward, everything shall pass with time.
Yeah, actually, I had another guest on the show. Actually, this episode hasn't yet been released, but it will be, I think by the time this episode comes out, it'll have come out. So I might as well talk about it. But, you know, we were talking about always, like, you always want to keep moving. You always want to move forward. And sometimes the movement that you make, you may not know what exactly the right decision is, in terms of, you know, am I moving in the right direction? You know, whether it's in business or, you know, some decisions in the, you know, in your job or whatever, you may not know if you're actually making the right decision, but if you just sit around and don't do anything, you're not really making any progress or any momentum. So you kind of want to just make a decision and move in some direction. And that sounds almost like what you're talking about, you know, in terms of, you know, not just isolating yourself and sitting there and being, you know, allowing yourself to kind of have all, get into the, all those mind traps that you talked about and everything. And you want to keep moving forward. And even if it's just a phone call to help you, you know, move forward in that right direction, that might be, you know, all you need. So you said that a lot of the soldiers after that incident where you lost some soldiers, a lot of the soldiers there were having trouble getting back out into the field. What were some of the things that helped them get back out? Was it really just literally someone going in and saying, "Hey, it's time for your shift to, or it's time for your, you know, turn to do, you know, whatever, let's go on patrol or whatever," and just kind of force them out there? Or was there some sort of process that you guys went through?
Well, one of the things that we did do is we started forcing people out of their rooms. I know it sounds pretty simplistic, and I don't know if you're an officer or NCO. Me being an officer, you know, I try not to get in non-commissioned officer business. Those are the direct contacts of soldiers, but we required a mandatory PT every day, except for Sunday. Just getting people physically moving. I do believe that's something about keeping the chemical balance in your body moving. I think it's good to sometimes to burn off bad energy. You know, it's just like, you know, sometimes when you clear your mind and challenge your body and move forward. I think that helped a lot, but not allowing people to eat in the rooms and not allowing them to eat by themselves. I know it sounds pretty simplistic, but the military has a way of assigning a battle buddy. We kind of do the same thing in schools. We get a new kid coming in, you're not really alone your first week. It's already awkward when you're new to a school, but we take kids that are leaders, like our student council members. And my last school, we even had a thing called link crew, where we intentionally put our top seniors with our incoming freshmen to just kind of ease their way through, knowing that we identify some tough times and bring them forward. And then, you know, we'd even do something crazy, like it wasn't real challenging, but mental games. You know, it sounded crazy, but having little tournaments. I don't care if it was cribbage. A lot of them liked to play video games, but it took their mind off. But it kept them moving, kept them active, and I think it helped a lot.
That's really good, and it actually makes a lot of sense. And through some of the conversations on this podcast that I've had with other people, it sounds like that resonates with other people as well. It wasn't just a random chance that you happen to come across, you know, doing this type of stuff. I talked to one soldier who came back. He had PTSD issues, and for him, the best thing for him was just getting outside and getting moving and being active, and that really helped him kind of get through some of his issues and kind of work through some of that stuff. Sort of getting back in touch with nature, going on hikes and kayaking and all sorts of things like that. And through several of the people that I spoke to, community is something that really kind of resonated with them. Where, you know, you're in the, you know, in the military, you have that tight knit group of people who, especially when you're deployed, sort of replaces your family. Not replaces entirely, but they kind of act as your family. People are there looking out for you and helping you with issues and things like that. You guys all kind of come together in that respect. But if you're just isolating yourself, staying in your room or eating by yourself or whatever, you're not getting that benefit of the community. So I think that's, you know, kind of what you did there in terms of essentially forcing people out of their rooms or out of their, you know, wherever they were to be involved in that community is probably a great move in terms of keeping them involved in that community and moving forward in the right direction.
Yeah, I'd say the same thing even in schools. I mean, you're going to have students that don't want to be involved in everything. It's because, you know, at times they're so nervous about they want to trust the world, and you just don't let them. You don't get a choice in this. And I think it's just like being a parent. There comes a time where I'm a parent of four kids. My job is not to make you happy. My job is to make you better. And I want you to be happy. But I know sometimes I have to make decisions for you that I know in your best interests. Different than taking my kindergartner in to get the flu shot that she is absolutely going to hate. But we know what's better or hurt, right? It's a pretty common, it just seems very common sense. But sometimes what we do when people are hurting, we want to leave them alone. In fact, that's the opposite you want to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Go out for, a coffee or something like that, take them somewhere and get them out so that they're not stuck in that rut, wherever they happen to be. Definitely don't leave them alone, because that's, like you were saying before, that's where those mind traps sort of seep in. And you start to have that internal dialogue that is, in many cases, very, very wrong. And you start to believe it, and you start to kind of internalize it and believe all of those negative things that you're thinking. And that getting out is definitely, and being involved with people is definitely a great way to, kind of negate all of that. So another question I had, so let's say we have someone who's listening and they realize or at least recognize that they're falling into some of these traps that you're talking about. And they want to become more resilient. Maybe it's a student, maybe it's a, a younger, teenage, or even preteen or something like that, or even older, maybe it's someone who is in the military. What advice would you give them, to be able to, start working on building resiliency, through whatever processes that they may be going through?
First of all, I just think that sometimes we need to just acknowledge that we live in the greatest country in the world, and we have so many resources available to us right at our fingertips. If you're a soldier, military one source, there are people that are on there 24/7 waiting for your text, your phone call, your email. And these are highly trained people that are looking out for you, and that's their sole purpose in life. And you've earned that resource. Use it. I think a lot of people just don't use it. The second thing is, if you're a student, our schools are loaded with people that want to help. And maybe it starts with finding that first person you trust and sharing. And I know it's really hard because you don't want anybody to know your business, but here's the deal. If you want to get better, then you got to share if you want to grow. Then personally, I just think it takes that very first thing, setting that very first goal. And it might be as simple as, hey, if I want to lose 10 pounds, maybe this week, I don't focus on losing 10 pounds. But I think what we really talk about is, okay, today I'm going to go for a walk today. How hard is it to go for a walk? It's a beautiful day. Let's get outside. Let's go for a walk. And then holding yourself accountable, right? Real-time goals, and have a plan on actually how you're going to do it. I just think that we're so lucky to live in the United States, or even in industrialized countries, the supports are everywhere and people want to help. Don't have any money. There's a lot of people in our churches that are trained to do this very thing. But it starts with trusting somebody and finding somebody in your life that you trust. To me, what helped me grow my resilience is have a few people that are going to not, there's a big difference between having a mentor and having a friend. Your mentor can be a friend to you, but a mentor is going to tell you things that you probably don't want to hear. A friend's going to tell you stuff that makes you feel good. And if they're a good friend, they'll be a mentor to you. But trust them and get some critical feedback. It's hard to hear it, but if it helps you grow, then it's worth every bit of it.
Absolutely. I love that whole thing there. That makes a ton of sense. And I really hope that helps some people who are, struggling with that resiliency issue and becoming a little bit more gritty, if you will. So it looks like we're sort of coming up on time here. I like to ask the veterans that I have on this show one last question kind of before we wrap things up. And you can answer this question however you like, either with a joke or something maybe more serious. But the question is there anything that you wish someone would have told you before you joined the military? Any piece of advice or tips or things like that?
I think what I would share with people, I have a 15 who's going to turn 16 here in a couple of weeks, and he's going to be 17 here in about a year. And he talks to me all the time. He's going to join the military and going to join the military and going to join the military. I think I'd ask them as I turn around and said what they should have told me is, do you know what you're about to do? Cause people thank you for your service all the time. It's a little awkward, but I think what I'd share with people is The reason you're joining is become a better version of you. And if you let the military do that, there's going to be ups and downs. There's going to be doubts. And why did I do this? But, you know, I think at the end of the day, what people should tell you is that you're going to come out of this better than when you went into it, if you allow it, the process just to happen to you. And to me, it all comes back to mindset. I come across a lot of veterans, a lot of people have served. And for those people listening that have served, thanks for service. I know you don't like to hear it. I don't like to hear it. But the reality is this 1% of our population does it today. And that doesn't mean if you don't serve, you know, there's a lot of things you can do. You don't have to just serve the military, but just trust the process. Stay true to why you joined. And at the end of the day, you're going to be a better version of yourself than when you went in. At the time, you know, it was all about me. How am I going to pay for college? And, you know, I think that there's a lot easier ways to pay for college. Join the military because you want to become a better person. And if you trust it, it will happen.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Drive On Podcast.